Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer's our guest for both hours, and we are going to mix it up a little bit today. It's the end of Propinquity Week, or we're coming near to the end of Propinquity Week here at Catholic Answers. I've mentioned it a few times. That is, Propinquity Week is everybody's got to come. It's like homecoming week. You got to come home and work here.
I'm not sure how that's like homecoming week.
You come home
and work.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's nice to have you here, Joe. thank you for finding holes in my analogies. You've shared an office with Braden, our newest apologist, the very fine young Braden Cook. Carlo in, everybody in. And we've really enjoyed having everybody around.
Can I make a suggestion for everyone online?
Yeah.
If you're watching this right now, why don't you vote for Propinquity King and Propinquity Queen?
We should have a Propinquity King.
And just to make it a little more like homecoming.
On YouTube. But that's the only place we can go. So just vote for...
Choose anyone. Just type their name in the comments, and then once we get some regular comments that are, you know, we see the same names over and over again,
we'll know that
we can then create a poll.
Okay,
and then we can make it all very scientific.
All right. Okay. So we're going to have a vote for Propinquity King and Propinquity Queen.
Speaking of comments on YouTube, this is Flannel Panel, kind of, and the first question we've got is, where's Cy's flannel?
Oh, really? Really? That's a serious question? Have you ever been part of Flannel Panel? It's a double failure for me today. Usually on Flannel Panel, I forget to wear my flannel. But today, I told Joe, I'll bring a flannel for me and one for you. I did neither of those things. So I got all the way here before I remembered it even was Flannel Panel.
And it turned out I had a flannel in my luggage. So this was really a triple failure because I succeeded too.
Which... Yeah. So, and you know, Chris Jack's usually with us. We just don't have Chris with us today. So here's what we're going to do. I told you it was going to be interesting. And I'll tell you what, I love summertime. I love when people do a little bit something different for the summertime. There used to be TV shows that would just run in the summer. And so let's do a little something different for the summer. You're part of the Flannel Panel today. You can call 888-318-7884 and get involved because we don't have Chris. So we need a third member. So... we'll just let, but you got to stay on topic. We're going to do topics and you got to be on topic. So
you can fill the Chris check role. We are tentatively calling this segment, Check Yourself.
Check yourself before you
wreck yourself.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for playing along.
I had to save that for you because I'm not sure enough of the listeners are old or young enough to know.
Or can just recognize something that was actually of high quality by my low quality imitation. All right. You can be part of a Flannel Panel today if you want, 888-318-7884. And I was going to impress Chris with our first topic when we thought that Chris was going to come here because it was going to be about Joan of Arc. Because, you know, Chris loves Joan of Arc. And... then the first time I think Chris even liked me at all was when he found out that I love Joan of Arc. He started to think that there might be some redeeming quality to me. And now you love Joan of Arc.
It's true.
It has happened.
And what's more, you actually played a major role in this.
I love this part.
I know.
Me and my spiritual partner, Mark Twain. I feel the two of us.
The two of you are equally pious.
Yes, we're very similar. So you read Twain's...
Well, let's go back a little bit. We were in Germany, and we stayed on a couple extra days to speak at Patch Military Base in Stuttgart, and to speak in English. Don't worry, we're not impressive here.
It would have been awesome if we did it in German. It would have just been like cartoon German.
Right. It would have been like MASH. Right. not MASH. What is it? What is it? Colonel Klinker? What is...
Colonel... No, you're thinking of Stalag 13.
This is a terrible...
Hogan's Heroes.
Hogan's Heroes. There it is. That's exactly what I was thinking of. So, anyway. Sai gives a talk on Joan of Arc, and I see it on the schedule, and I'm not sure why he's giving a talk on Joan of Arc.
I don't know about that many things. If you're going to make me do three talks in one day, one of them's going to be on Joan of Arc.
There you go. The talk was amazing. I mean,
What's up? Take that, internet.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It was fantastic. Because Joan of Arc is one of those figures where you hear about her and you think, wow, this teenage girl was this military leader for France. Like, if it was a teenager who, like, beat France, that wouldn't be that impressive. But a teenage girl leading the French army
to victories.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is so surprising and so shocking and does seem just of itself miraculous. But then the next question people naturally have is, well, why? Like, why would God want France to win? It's like saying that your team miraculously won the World Cup. Like, yeah, but does God care about those kind of little things?
Yeah,
and I thought your talk succeeded in really giving sound reasons for believing that, yeah, she was actually conversing with the saints. These things that she called her voices, where they would speak to her, it wasn't some psychological abnormality. Mm-mm. These were authentic miracles. They had every indication of being real miracles. And it changed the whole fate of the world in this really remarkable way.
It did. That's what people don't get, I think, about Joan. But
so maybe you could tell us how.
Well, she's just, I mean, the part of the reason I love Joan is she's 19 when she dies. She's a 19-year-old. And she is not a university educated. She probably doesn't even have the equivalent of what we would call a high school education today.
Right.
But she is a genius. I honestly believe that. I think Joan is a natural genius. And she is a visionary. And
not in like the way Silicon Valley uses.
No, it's not like a Steve Jobs type visionary. She sees visions. She converses with saints, and so I do think that the fundamental kind of question that you posed about why would God have this girl do these things, and what you end up seeing is that in a story of this 19-year-old girl who herself doesn't know why God is calling for these things from her. She doesn't ever know what her mission in life is. She knows what her mission is in terms of what she personally has to accomplish, but she doesn't ever know in her life what her mission is in terms of its importance to world history. But it's as simple as this, Joe. And if you consider Joan dying in the early part of the 1400s, the beginning of the 1400s.
You know what? I'm going to pause you right there because you're about to give the whole climax of this thing, and I want to give a little more backstory.
Oh, you do?
No, okay. If I may. Because one of the, like, reading, or actually I listened to it on audiobook. I don't want to say I read it. Listening to Mark Twain's biography of Joan of Arc, which is phenomenal.
That's the thing, yeah. Twain wrote a great biography of a Catholic saint.
One of the things that is really underscored there, which I think I vaguely knew but didn't know to this level, is she's fighting for this French king who really cannot be bothered to fight for himself. Who she keeps being like, all you have to do is go here and you'll win. And he's like, yeah, but I'd rather just stick around and do nothing and wait for the English to defeat us. And it is really remarkable because she's serving this king who is absolutely ungrateful. And it really underscores that, like, why this conflict? Not even just, like, why favor France over England? People might be able to fill in their own kind of answers to that question. But, like, why support this claimant to the crown?
Yeah. When Henry is actually pretty competent in England.
Right.
like he actually is a better king. Probably.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, right. Am I still too early for
No, please. I just wanted to build up a little more, so now they're ready.
No, there you go. Okay, so this and sweet, beautiful, brilliant, faithful Joan goes to her death not knowing that virtually 100 years, almost 100 years to the year after her death, England will get caught up in the Reformation and in Henry VIII's nonsense, and Catholicism will be destroyed in England. Henry will steal the monasteries. He will kill. He will drive out. He will. And if France had been part of the British orbit when that happened, this great Catholic country also would have lost its Catholic identity. It would not have survived. And in the great wars of religion and the things that happened subsequently, France would not have been there as a buffer between Spain and the rest of Protestantism, between Spain and Protestantism. And Spain went on to make most of the world Catholic. That all, when you think about all of South America and Mexico and the Philippines and all of the hundreds of millions, probably billions of people received the Eucharist because Joan gave her life to fight for France. And that's the way I see the story. And she never knew it. She knew that she was serving her great king, but she never knew the full meaning. And that, I find so the conclusion of the story for me, Joe, is just do what Jesus asks you to do. Don't do more, don't do less. Do what Jesus asks you to do, because his plan is perfect. Whatever he's got in mind for your life, it's far greater than what you could imagine for your life.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, because he's doing things that she wouldn't have anticipated. Anglicanism. I mean, there were horrible things being done by the English soldiers at the time. And this is one of the sort of depressing realizations you come to in, you know, reading her story. But there were a whole new avenues of bad things to come that she wouldn't have even anticipated. And God was providentially preparing not only France or Spain or Portugal, but an entire new world that she wouldn't have even known about.
You can get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. We're going to take a break. It's Flannel Panel, and you are the third member of Flannel Panel. You just got to stay on topic. But you don't have, by the way, when I say stay on topic, we'll move on. But if there's any topic that catches your interest and you want to draw us back to it, you're welcome to do that. We're not trying to exclude you. We're trying to include you. Special Flannel Panel. But before you call, put on your flannel shirt, 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Support for Catholic Answers Live comes from Catholic Chemistry, a dating app for Catholics. Founded by a longtime member of the Catholic Answers team, CatholicChemistry.com.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN News, headquartered in Washington, D.C., operates multiple global news services, including Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register newspaper. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It's Flannel Panel, but there's only two members of the Flannel Panel here today. Flannel Panel is when we put on flannel shirts or similar, and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Today, you are a member of the Flannel Panel. You can call and get involved, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We were just talking about Joan of Arc and just an incredible, beautiful story. And Joan, the other thing about Joan is some of the best theologians in the world are trying to trick her into committing heresy.
Yes.
And they can't do it. They can't get her.
Some
to
of the best in a perverse sense of that.
Yeah, sure. You're most skilled, I guess, would be.
Yeah. I mean, there are these theologians of the University of Paris who, in their defense, probably do think that she's a witch, probably think that she actually is this successful because she's consorting with evil, and they're trying to trip her up to get her to say something heretical. And she repeatedly, deftly maneuvers around all of these things. So remember, at the time that this is happening, you have what's called the papal schism in the West, where there's three different men claiming to be pope. And so they say, she says something about the pope, and they say, which of the three popes are you talking about? And she said, I didn't know there was more than one. Which is
such a great
reply, because like, what are you talking about? And now later she clarifies that she means the pope in Rome. So she's actually right about that as well. When a lot of Catholics had followed the wrong person claiming to be pope.
Yeah.
But it was just a very, and this is a young woman without a lawyer, without any kind of education or assistance, things that she's actually permitted. She was denied her legal rights.
She was.
She appealed to the Pope, and that was ignored and denied. Like, this is, you know, and people point to this moment and say, oh, how could the church allow this to happen? Well, this wasn't done according to the rules of the church. And repeatedly, the bishop there violated, because the bishop was, you know, fanatically pro-English and was not pursuing, you know, the good of the church or the good of justice or the good of the salvation of Joan's soul or any of these things that he should have been motivated by, but was seemingly trying to get promoted to, you know, get an archbishopric and all this. And it was a disgraceful affair. But in the midst of this, while she has everything stacked against her, she has one after another brilliant kind of answer. And then the Catechism actually quotes her at one point. I'm blanking on the paragraph. I know Tim Staples would be able to tell you. But in her trial, she talks about the relationship of Christ and the church. And she just says, I only know that they're one person. We shouldn't try to complicate it.
Yeah, that's what I mean about I do think she's a genius, but she's also, of course, a saint. She is Saint Joan of Arc now. And
it's paragraph 795. I'm sorry. I just found it.
I'm going to find a little later I'll read the testimony of her mother at her second trial. You know that you know this, but there's a second trial of Joan of Arc in which Joan of Arc is acquitted. But of course, it's, I think, maybe 30 years. I can't remember the exact date, but it's I think maybe 30 years after her death. And her mother, Isabelle Romée, made that trial happen. Her mother's a really impressive person. The women in that family were impressive. The men less so, but the women quite impressive in that family. So when I find it, I'll read it. It's beautiful testimony of a mother to her saintly daughter. But tell me what you thought about Twain. What did you think about Twain?
So I've read that this was his favorite book of his own. And Mark Twain does not famously have positive feelings towards organized religion. And so I thought it was a really, I guess I'd say this. There is a radiance to sanctity where when you see someone who is truly holy, it's often winsome and persuasive, even to people who dislike the abstract idea of religion, that to really see the Catholic thing lived well is incredibly inviting and attractive. Yeah. And Joan lives this out so well.
It's interesting because Mark Twain is a comedian, really, and his mode of comedy is satire. And that has a certain cynicism to it. And he's not cynical about Joan. It's like his cynicism totally fails him in the presence of Joan.
Yeah. It is incredible. Because, you know, you can imagine any number of ways you could have gone pretty sardonic and mocking and all of this. And you really have, I don't think there's any of that.
No, none. All right, can I read Isabelle Romée's?
I think there's also a caller. We have our first Chris Jack.
Oh, we do? We have our first? Okay.
Lauren from Cloquet, Minnesota.
All right, let's get Lauren on here. Boy, you better be good, Lauren, because it's either you or Isabelle Romée, the mother of Joan of Arc. So this better
no
be
pressure.
Good. Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Okay, am I on?
Yes, you are. We're happy you're here. Welcome to Flannel Panel.
Okay. I was on the Rhine River trip with you guys, but
Lauren, of course. You've been on several trips with us, Lauren. Wonderful to speak with you. Great to speak with you.
Yeah. But I just wanted to ask you guys a question / make a suggestion. If you guys have not listened to the 10-episode audio story on Augustine Institute's formed platform of Joan of Arc called The Victory of Joan of Arc.
No, I haven't.
I think it is super well done.
Wonderful.
I listened to my mow the lawn. I've listened to it over a dozen times. It's just very, very well done, in my opinion.
Okay, so do you know who does it? Who's the scholar that does it? Do you remember?
Well,
or is it
done
by
their radio program? So Tim Gray's name is on it.
And oh, I
don't know.
I see.
Who actually did their,
oh, so it's a corporate effort. It's not like a set of lectures or something.
Oh, yeah.
They
yes,
did.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It looks. Yes. It looks.
It's
I just pulled it up.
The Victory of Joan of Arc.
Are you in our club? Our We Love Joan of Arc club?
I am. Oh, I don't know. I didn't know there was one.
We're forming it right now.
There's three members so far.
Yeah, I love Joan of Arc.
Okay, so tell me what you love about Joan of Arc, Lauren. Like, what got you about Joan?
I think her faithfulness to do what she knew was right. I mean, she was never wavering. She knew what she was supposed to do. And I just find it intriguing as she tries to win over the people that she comes up against. And, oh, I'm not going to listen to this country girl. Go back to your farm. And,
right.
And it's just, so it's overcoming the establishment, if you will.
Yeah. You know who put this together? So, I just discovered this guy had become Catholic.
Who's that?
Paul McCusker. Now, that name is not going to be familiar to everyone, but his work might be. He was the guy, the brains behind Adventures in Odyssey, the Protestant children's radio show, which I grew up loving.
Oh, wow.
And he did stuff. So he's great in radio theater. He did that back in the 80s, and then he became Catholic at some point. In 2007, it looks like. He's got a Wikipedia page.
So all right, I just want to get it right. You go to the Augustine Institute's formed platform, and you get 10 episodes, the audio story of Joan of Arc. Am I right, Lauren? Is that where people should go?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Lauren, yep. Thank you. Thank you for calling. You're a great member of Flannel Panel.
Yes.
It was great to have you on.
Great.
Yeah.
I literally just Googled Augustine Institute, Joan of Arc. So I'm sure there are other ways you can do it as well.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's very easy to find on podcast or YouTube.
But now maybe we've got five people in our club. McCusker might be in our club as well.
Perfect.
Five people in the We Love Joan Club.
Yeah.
I'm going to let somebody else be on here, but I got these words from Isabelle Rome are so... I'll just read them. So just imagine this. Okay. So in, I guess it's in the 1450s probably. 1455. They finally have the second trial of Joan of Arc. And this time it's not in some faraway place. It's in Paris. It's at Notre Dame Cathedral. And I want to visit Notre Dame Cathedral. I mean, I'd love to see Notre Dame Cathedral, but just to go where they had this trial, that's how much I love Joan. I only want to go to France because of Joan. I want to see everything Joan in France. So just imagine this. The cathedral is already, 450 years old. And up the steps comes old Isabelle Rome, and she is going to open the trial. She gets to give the opening testimony. So she goes in there where all these lawyers and theologians are gathered for the second trial of Joan of Arc. And this is what she tells them. I had a daughter born in lawful wedlock who grew up amid the fields and pastures. I had her baptized and confirmed and brought her up in the fear of God. I taught her respect for the traditions of the church as much as I was able to do given her age and simplicity of her condition. I succeeded so well, she spent much of her time in church, and after having gone to confession, she received the sacrament of Eucharist every month. Because the people suffered so much, she had a great compassion for them in her heart, and despite her youth, she would fast and pray for them with great devotion and fervor. She never thought, spoke, or did anything against the faith. Certain enemies had her arraigned in a religious trial. Despite her disclaimers and appeals, both tacit and expressed, and without any help given to her defense, she was put through a perfidious, violent, iniquitous, and sinful trial. The judges condemned her falsely, damnably, and criminally, and put her to death in a cruel manner by fire, for the damnation of their souls, and in notorious, infamous, and irreparable loss to me, Isabel, and mine.
Wow.
That kills me. Every time I read that, I feel like this woman is a lion. She fought all those years to have her daughter's name cleared, and then she said that when she got up, when she finally got to be in front of the judges.
It is truly incredible. And unfortunately, her husband, Joan's father, did not live to see his daughter vindicated.
Yeah.
But they had to know, this was a holy and falsely accused.
They did. I mean, of course, they weren't always thrilled with her career path, and it must have been very upsetting to a father to have his daughter off to war and all of that. But let's go to Javier in South Carolina. Javier, you're part of the Flannel Panel now. Hi, Javier. What do you got?
Hey guys.
Hey.
Nice to hear from you. I'm on the car driving with my girls. I just want to say you guys are my heroes. If there's a title that I can give you, it will be like Heroes of the Faith, but from just the layman.
Now, oh, thank you.
The one thing that I just wanted to add was that Joan of the Arc, but, there's a common conversation that I have with Protestants in regards to how much theology do we need to be saved?
Yes.
Virtually none.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they make a huge focus on theology. And I'm like, well, Joan d'Arc was the saint, and she didn't have to, like, too much or a lot of theology. Actually, that's a good question. Like, how much theology did she know?
As I said, Joan was a genius. So it's really, that's my view. That's my personal view, is I put Joan in a genius category, like among the rare.
But intellects. She's not a highly educated
But she
genius.
Doesn't. So who knows what she knew? I mean, she can read, but I don't know at what level
she
can read.
She doesn't write her own. They have to help her sign her name and everything.
Right,
that's one of the things Mark Twain mentions.
Right.
So she has to like dictate letters and things.
So maybe maybe reading was actually being read to in Joan's case. Maybe she knew things because they were read to her. Javier, did you say you're with your daughters?
Yeah, we're going to volleyball right now.
Oh, well, God bless you. Well, give your daughters a copy of Mark Twain's Joan of Arc if you haven't yet. And there's the music. I got to go. I'm sorry, Javier. I would have liked to speak with you more. But thank you for honoring Joan. I'd love to get you all in our club, the We Love Joan of Arc Club. I just started it today. We'll be right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Want to be a more powerful witness for Christ? One of the most powerful evangelization tools you can acquire is, in fact, courtesy. The apostolate of courtesy is just the message the church needs in this time of diminished social grace. Inspired by St. Francis de Sales, author Robert Grieving shows how everyday manners, whether in conversation or emails, can make us powerful witnesses for Christ. Get the apostolate of courtesy today at shop.catholic.com.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carla Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they're our allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Your favorite Catholic Answers books are now available on Audible. Whether you're commuting, taking a nice walk, or relaxing at home, you can deepen your faith with audiobooks that will make a real difference in your life, no matter where life takes you. Listen to trusted Catholic Answers authors explain the faith clearly, answer important questions, and help you grow in confidence as a Catholic. Visit audible.com today, search for Catholic Answers, and let the learning begin.
Feeling stuck? Feeling like you are not sure what's next? Well, you can be sure of this. God is not finished with you yet. In his new book, Not Finished Yet, Dr. Marcus Peters shares a powerful message of hope, healing, and transformation in Jesus Christ. Read it to discover how to overcome struggles, embrace grace, and step into the life God is calling you to. Get Not Finished Yet today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live, Flannel Panel. But we need a third member of the Flannel Panel because it's just me and Joe today. So you can be the third member of the Flannel Panel. You're welcome to call in 888-318-7884. You just got to be on topic. And so far, the topic has been Joan of Arc. But I think
although, even in fairness, we don't always hold the third member of the Flannel Panel.
He never stays on topic. Yeah, you got to be at least as on topic as Chris Cech. Okay, that fair enough, Joe. Joe, I want to say something to you in Portuguese. A Eucaristia é mesmo Jesus.
I don't think they do the H for the J.
Como o corpo e o sangue de Cristo. I don't know how to say this. Chave para tudo que cremos.
I want to apologize to all of our Brazilian listeners.
Wait, if you could speak Portuguese, I really apologize for that. But I am actually reading Portuguese, and I think it's cool because I'm holding a copy of Joe's book, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, but it's in Portuguese. How do you feel? How does that make you feel to
I was
see that?
Totally surprised.
I didn't know that?
No idea this was happening. And then yesterday in the staff meeting, Todd comes forward like a kid on Christmas with a stack of presents for everyone.
Well,
and it's our books in Portuguese.
And the reason Joe mentioned Brazil, of course, Brazil, they speak Portuguese, but these are for the market in Brazil.
They're like a Brazilian people down there who speaks Portuguese.
There's like a Brazilian of them, yes. And they, I heard they do barbecue really good. Is it barbecue?
What do they call it? Oh, yeah. Whatever they call it, they.
But they need to be reminded of their Catholic faith. The Catholic faith is under assault everywhere. As Todd said yesterday, by the sects, especially evangelical fundamentalist Protestants, doing what Todd called sheep stealing. I don't know if is that politic to say sheep stealing?
I think you can say that. When you take someone who is a faithful Catholic and you try to lure them away, you're not building up the body of Christ. You're just dividing it.
Yeah. But Todd made the point even more so by secular culture. So we have all these great books, and Todd gets requests from around the world. Can we translate them? And if it's a reputable publisher, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think you're making any money off of this. I think
that's totally all right.
I don't know. You might get some. What do they have? The real down. What do they have down there?
Something. that sounds right.
Yes, something. They got a Brazilian something. So you might be getting some pieces of eight or something.
Yeah, real. Good work.
Yeah. So
it real.
But I just loved seeing our books in Portuguese. Listeners at home,
at least one,
play along.
Yeah, there are some that are maybe improvements from a cover perspective. Now, the next one is just like the American
Ace I tua mei. Do you think I'm even close on that?
No, I don't.
Ace I tua mei. What book do you think that? Una defensa bíblica e histórica das doutrinas marianas. What do you think, listeners? Yes, you're right. Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines. I don't speak Portuguese. I don't know how to pronounce these words.
No one wondered.
So I apologize. No one was like, wow, he's really good at Portuguese. I'm saying that by means of apologizing to the nation and people of Brazil. A Bíblia é livro católico.
The Bible is a Catholic libro.
You just didn't want people to play along at home.
Oh,
right?
No.
You just wanted to say it.
Sorry.
So that's good. One for Tim. One for Joe, one for Jimmy. All those books now available in Brazil, and then this one from Trent Hahn.
Trent Hahn.
I don't. I was going to pronounce it in Portuguese.
Barely better than in Portuguese.
I don't know what that was about. Sorry, Trent Hahn. Duras palavras. Duras palavras. Okay. What do you think, you Portuguese speakers? What do you think I just tried to say? Hard Sayings. That's Trent's book on...
I want to say that cover is really good.
This is an improvement. They definitely improved our
cover.
We
had an okay cover before, but like the new cover where it's a shocked-looking Aquinas, it's great.
This is a hilarious cover. Look it up. Look up the Portuguese version of Hard Sayings with Trent Hahn, because the picture of Thomas Aquinas is hilarious. He has the halo above his head. He's reading scripture, but his eyes are popping out of his head because of what he's reading in scripture. He's got the
And so if you've
eyes.
Ever had that reaction while reading scripture, this is the book for you.
Also available in Portuguese. Yeah, it also available.
So two quick things. Braden, the catechumen in the chat, said that your pronunciation is simultaneously admirable and horrendous.
Wait, who said that?
Braden.
Someone named Braden?
Yeah, our briefest Catholic answers.
Oh, it was Braden. It was our Braden.
I mean,
he doesn't speak Portuguese. If Braden speaks Portuguese, they're teaching Portuguese in the schools
Bartleby,
of Oklahoma now?
Yeah, I mean,
that's a big subject there.
And then
somebody wrote something.
Somebody else said their
one-year-old
is clapping for you.
Duros palavras. That's what some palavras. Did I say it right? Somebody sent me a pronunciation. So, are you people just messing with me now? The point is not that I can speak Portuguese. The point is how exciting it is.
Yes.
That Catholic Answers books are all around the world, and Brazil has more Catholics per capita I don't even know what that means.
Brazil has the largest number of Catholics of any country.
That's what I was trying to say.
Even though that number is dropping, they're only 56% of the country's population.
They
used to be virtually 100%. So we see this is a huge area where the population itself desperately needs the truth of the faith, but in many cases they were brought up in kind of a lukewarm form of Catholicism. As recently as 1994, it was 75% Catholic. Now it's only about 50%. Protestants, meanwhile, have gone from 14% to about 26%. So they've doubled in size, and non-religious have gone from about 5 to 14%. They've about tripled in size. So all of that is to say we are losing a lot of ground in Brazil in this enormous country that desperately needs good apologetics.
Not anymore. So. Catholic Answers is there now. Somebody now, the person who tried to get me to pronounce it correct before on YouTube now is explaining to me how to pronounce it. Duras palavras. How'd I do? I need a yes, you got it. All right.
I'm happy to give you that if some that would other, make this stop.
Some other comedian says, what language was Cy speaking? Okay. All right, smarty pants. I'm doing the best I can.
My moderate embarrassment related to this was trying to pronounce the name Jacana, which is like a street in Orange County. And I pronounced it Jacana. And it was like, no, it turns out that wasn't Spanish. It's Portuguese. And it's a bird.
Oh, so you're supposed to say the J?
Yeah. But I'm probably still mispronouncing
it. Look, you're in Southern California and there's a name that looks Spanish. You're going to give that a Spanish pronunciation.
That's fair.
Listen, Portuguese people, you're just going to have to accept some stuff around here, okay?
It's like, we need to evangelize the Portuguese and Brazilians, but we also need to insult them gratuitously.
We need you to come back to the Catholic faith, all you Portuguese speakers, but settle down, all right, with your pronunciations. Sad that the country with one of the biggest Jesus statues in the world is becoming less Christian. That is sad. That seems to be the way of everything. I'll tell you what, I'm going to move to another story then, Joe.
Please.
Because that actually gives me a little segue to a story I wanted to do with you. And I'm going to read some of this story to you because it's from the Catholic Herald. And I think they've been doing great journalism over at the Catholic Herald, but this one, kind of UK-based journalism, but I love reading it. It's just wonderful. How Amnesty Turned Against Its Founder's Vision by David Hahn. Do you know David Hahn? Like H-A-H-N. Is that one of Scott Hahn's
progeny? I believe it is.
Scott
In
and
fact,
Kimberly Hahn?
He has a new podcast.
Oh, he does?
That I am on.
He did a good job on this article. I'll just say that. So
he also has this in this is episode 2 of his podcast. Just for you, just so you know, it's like the same theme of Amnesty.
David Hahn, this is how you do it. You double dip on this stuff. You're not going to make a living as a journalist if you don't publish it in at least 2 different places.
I think that in a good way. How did this guy double dip?
Did that sound bad? What I was saying?
Oh, I didn't know if it. I didn't want to make sure.
Like a case in point. This book is in Portuguese right here. Joe Heschmeyer's book.
I started it over from scratch. No.
It wasn't easy for Joe, but all right. David Hahn, thank you for this very fine article in a very fine publication, Catholic Herald. Amnesty International has found itself at the center of a remarkable controversy after publishing and then withdrawing a report that accused Catholic and Christian nonprofits of being part of an alleged anti-rights movement. The episode has raised uncomfortable questions, not simply about Amnesty's internal processes, but about the disturbing mission drift the organization has undergone since its founding. So this is what put me in mind of this story was the person on YouTube who said sad that Brazil is losing its Catholic faith. But this is the thing that happens is what was once gloriously Christian can lose its way. And Amnesty International, I was very much convinced from this article by David Hahn, has more or less entirely lost its way. It was horrifying to read about it. The founder of Amnesty International, he writes, Peter Berenson was himself a convert to Catholicism, which had a strong lasting influence on his life. And the whole idea of Amnesty International was, and I remember doing this decades ago, you sit down with your religion class and you write a letter to get somebody out of prison and, you know, probably wrote a letter about Nelson Mandela or somebody like that. The idea was people who were falsely imprisoned, Amnesty could get thousands of people to write letters And then the people in the country go, oh, just let them go. You know, like, well, it's not worth all this international. And Amnesty was great at that. The organization won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1977. All of this is coming from David Hahn's article. But they turn into a bunch of creeps. Now they say the Catholic Church, they're turning their attention against the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church doesn't support abortion, because abortion is an absolute liberty.
Again, to do this while claiming to be honoring the legacy of your founder, who's a convert to Catholicism. I don't know anything about how seriously he took his faith throughout his life. I'm not judging him one or the other. I simply don't know enough about Peter Benenson or Berenson. But there's such an obvious difference to any sane person between the original things for which Amnesty International was created. You know, people being imprisoned for toasting to liberty under Salazar, or people, you know, wanting to stand up to dictatorial regimes. And then on the one hand to say, oh, well, you don't have the legal right to kill your children at any stage of development. And even if you're pro-choice, hopefully you can be sane enough to see this. And one way to measure this would be to say, well, within the pro-choice side, different pro-choicers stake out different places. Some would say abortion should be legal until you can hear the baby crying. And you know, coming out of the womb, partial birth abortion should be legal. Others are going to say that's obviously infanticide, but it should be illegal until some other point in pregnancy. Now, hopefully amongst pro-choicers, you would say, well, look, if we can't decide where exactly to draw the line, the fact that somebody else draws the line in a different place than we do isn't a human rights violation. And it's insane to treat it as one. And insane to treat it as one in this way that we don't talk about enough. When you do things like this, it might work for you in the short term, but in the long term, it does real and intractable damage. When you amplify, if everything is a fire, then fire loses all of its meaning.
Right.
If you're constantly saying things are human rights violations, then real human life violations have been cheapened by this. And we see this all the time. We have this escalation of terms to the most extreme charge imaginable. And pretty soon you find yourself calling ordinary things by these really shocking titles. And when people stop believing you, this happens a lot with so-called trans genocide. If you say, well, children shouldn't become trans, that's a very normal stake, a growing number of the population actually agrees with. To call that genocide means that you can't then turn around and talk about actual genocide.
Right,
because... Like,
what happened to the Armenians is exactly the same as you saying, I don't agree with you on transgender.
Right. Yeah. If I can't use the bathroom, that's the same as being rounded up, put in a camp, and shot to death.
It's not the same, Amnesty. That's right. And so David Hahn writes this, over the past two decades, Amnesty's work has taken a new direction. It has now decidedly aligned itself with the progressive left, particularly on sexuality and reproduction. And I must say, I'm always leery of using the words left and right, because to be a Catholic is not to be left wing, it's not to be right wing. And so we don't stand against the left, we don't stand against the right. But when he says progressive left on sexuality and reproduction, we know what that means, that those are anti-Christian stances. So he's talking about a particular form of leftism. Since 2020, Amnesty's policy has called for the full decriminalization of abortion, regardless of reason. And he put that in quotes, including up to birth. It also opposes restricting sex selective abortion, stating that restricting access to safe abortion is not the answer to structural discrimination. So, in other words, Amnesty was an organization that we all came to love because they got prisoners, political prisoners, liberty. And then some people came along who said, let's use that love of this organization and we'll try to pressure the Catholic Church to stop being against gay marriage, or pressure the local, I don't know, whatever, anybody to stop being against transgendered ideology. It's a total fail.
All that does is it ruins the institution. You take an institution that has a very popular move and then say, you need to take a really contentious position on this hotly divided issue. Of course, you're not going to win the issue. What's going to happen is people stop wanting to donate to you. They will stop wanting to support you. And this happens over and over and over again.
And now you'll have no hope of getting political prisoners out.
Right.
Like your original mission, you can't do anymore because people won't help you.
Susan B. Komen, breast cancer. It's like, well, why are you supporting Planned Parenthood? It's idiotic. Or Southern Poverty Law Center has just become this absolute leftist organization. Or these groups that on paper have this great mission that would get 80% plus support take these really controversial positions that are often really extreme, and they're in an ideological echo chamber, and they don't win the issue. And in the process, they've prostituted their institution in such a way that they've cheapened it, and it can no longer effectively stand for the thing that it stood for before, because what sane pro-life or conservative person is going to say, yeah, I'm going to back this group that is actively looking to undermine me, even if it's on an issue that we agree on? You're going to say, well, we need some other human rights organization, or we need some other anti-breast cancer organization, or whatever else the issue may be.
Right.
And it's such a completely unforced error, and it is maddening to see this kind of thing happen, that if you care about the thing that you're working for, you wouldn't do this. Like, if instead you're just using the victims of breast cancer or human rights abuses as a way of like pushing the agenda you actually care about abortion or transgenderism or whatever else, then you are using the very people you're meant to be defending.
I'll just read this last bit from David Hahn. Amnesty's apology is somewhat amusing. It said, "We apologize for the publication of a brief of the briefing, a growing threat." This is the one that said Christians, Catholics, our organizations are a danger, you know, a growing threat, the anti-rights movement in the UK. "This document should never have been published, and full responsibility for this error rests with Amnesty International UK. We will commission an independent external review to learn from this moment." And then I did find this snarky sentence kind of funny from David Hahn. "It is indeed very sorry that you now know what it privately thought of you."
Yes, exactly.
So, well done. We'll take a break. You're welcome. We want you to be a member of Flannel Panel, 888-318-7884. You want to talk about the corruption of institutions like Amnesty International? We'll still talk about Joan of Arc with you. Or if you want to talk about the proper pronunciation of Portuguese, those are the topics we've covered so far. You're welcome here, 888-318-7884.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
Alexian Brothers is a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. For 800 years, these Catholic brothers have offered a prophetic and daring response to the gospel. Serving Christ in the sick, the poor, and the dying. Is God calling you to be a courageous disciple? If you feel called to total self-giving as a religious brother in the mission of Jesus, call our vocations office at 847-264-8703. That's 847-264-8703. AlexianBrothers.org.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican Insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live, August 13, 2026, live. Today, I just want to say it. So if I
don't want to hold up a newspaper.
Yeah, we just
discovered on YouTube, it said this is a pre-recorded episode, which...
It's not pre-recorded. We're here. We're here live with you. You can call.
On the next pre-record,
yeah,
we should do this. We'd have a whole thing about how it's not pre-recorded.
Ask people to call in. Joe, you're a very mean person. 888-318-7884. We really are here. We really will take your call if you want to get involved in Flannel Panel today. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. We usually have Chris Check with us, but we don't. So what are we doing? What do you call a check? Check yourself.
Check yourself. You can check yourself by calling. The third member of Flannel Panel.
Yep. Just put on your flannel shirt and dial 888-318-7884. Whatever your take is, it's welcome here. A couple takes from the YouTubes. This is from Justin. I lost hope for most of those human rights charities when the UN appointed Iraq as the head of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Group. I think we've all seen those stories, and I do think that...
They are in a privileged place to find the human rights violations. In fairness.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes you need to catch a thief, so to speak.
Exactly.
Right? It takes a thief to catch a thief. So, which is a very fine movie, by the way, To Catch a Thief, and it was a pretty good TV show too. Jamie said I was in Amnesty International when I was in high school. As so many people were, it was great at one point. It was for really good kids in the early 2000s. This discussion is upsetting, as this wasn't what I supported back then. No, I know. That's the whole point. And then somebody else wrote at the break, Combat Wombat wrote, Cy and Joe look so serious right now. It's because we were on a break. We were sleeping. What do you think we do during the breaks here? We were sleeping. Stop bothering us, Combat Wombat.
We were screaming at people in the booth, like, why did you put pre-recorded episodes? Yeah,
what's wrong with you people? Get your act together.
The chair you saw flying across, that was directed to
us. I'm sorry, we didn't know you could see us during the break.
Yeah,
so
we're sorry for your... it's just like an Amazon International style apology.
We've appointed a commission to study our recent errors. All righty. I'll start a story from the... I'll give you one from Pope Leo.
Okay, great.
I found this website, Zeal, Z-E-A-L-E. Have you seen it?
No.
Zeal? I don't know who does it, but it's a pretty good website. Like, they have pretty good Catholic news there. Does anybody else know? Put it on the YouTube chat if you know about Zeal, because it's cool. a new discovery. I would say probably in the last 6 weeks I discovered it, and I've enjoyed it a lot. Pope Leo, going controversial. Are you okay with a controversial Leo story?
I am.
He went way out on a limb here. And I don't like to give the Pope advice, but reel it in, Pope Leo. You need to reel it in. Pope Leo urges Catholics to rediscover Sunday as the weekly Easter. The Holy Father said, now, I'm not making fun of Leo. I'm just playing around. I picked this story.
That's what I say when I'm making fun of people, too.
Yeah, I'm just playing around. Sorry, honey. Just playing around. Your poor wife. She told me stories yesterday.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, my gosh. The poor woman. The Holy Father said the liturgical year allows the faithful to encounter Christ's redemptive power with the Eucharist at the heart of our Lord's Day. I think this is so good. First of all, God bless the Pope for attending to the pastoral needs of people. I mean, I am one who often complains that the popes are operating at a level that's over our heads, and just stop it. Like, they get too fancy. That's what I think they get too fancy. But I probably shouldn't criticize them for that. I probably should just keep my mouth shut, because what they do is very important and they have a lot of responsibilities. But when I see this, like, just remind, you're the pastor, remind people that God wants them to rest and worship and be with family on Sunday. The encounter with Jesus, he said, who died and rose again for us, is the purpose that the church always pursues, placing the celebration of the Paschal event at the center of every moment. The liturgical year should thus be understood as a constant renewal of the work of salvation which Christ accomplishes in history. As she journeys through the temporal cycle, the church remains in contact with the Lord's redemptive action so that all the faithful may be filled with his grace. And Sunday is a huge part of that. So he just took his audience time to remind us. Do you get the temptations on Sunday? Like, let me just get this done. It'll make Monday so much easier. I'll get through this work.
Oh yeah, definitely. And also, the nature of the work that we're doing is it's very easy to sort of rationalize it.
I'm doing it for Jesus. So
right, this is holy work.
Yeah, right. Why should I listen to him? I'm working for him. Like
exactly.
That kind of attitude. Yeah. Yeah. And ever since the Pope made a reference to, Deus Domine, the Dies Domine, yes. no, Dies Domini, from Pope John Paul II, where he was really quite strong about this. He was a letter to the faithful about take your Sunday obligation more seriously. And part of it is an obligation to rest. And since then, I've been whittling away at it, becoming better at Sundays. Because you know what? If you leave it till Monday morning, it's the same problem. You just deal with it Monday.
Yeah, there are problems enough for tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
Put them off. Just give yourself to God and trust that He'll take care of the rest.
There's the music, though. But hey, we want you to be involved. Look at all the lines just lit up. So we're going to have callers when we come back. 888-318-7884. It's Flannel Panel, but we're short one member, so you get to be the third member of Flannel Panel today. If you want to talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective, give us a call. Jump on one of these topics from the beginning of the hour or the end, whatever you want to jump in on. We'd love to hear from you. 888-318-7884.